Hi, it's Quinn, and you're listening to Not So Bloody Mary, the show about women in history with negative reputations. Enjoy the show!
Hey, Grace.
Hey, Quinn.
How are you?
Tired?
Yeah, same. My brother was slamming drawers this morning when I was trying to sleep. It was not great. Yeah, I know. It's not nice. It's mean. He doesn't understand that his door, like his drawers, slam when he closes them if he doesn't do it like slowly. So he like throws them and then just like bangs.
Love that.
Yeah, I'm like, thanks a lot, Cooper. And then I'm like, Cooper, can you control your slam? And he's like, it doesn't slam. It does. I'm just going to go on the record right now saying that it does slam. How was sleeping in your basement? Was it cold or hot?
It was fine. It was okay.
Good.
It was all right.
I don't even have a basement to sleep in, so.
It kind of smells bad, but.
We have, like, a crawl space, but I've never been in there because I'm not allowed.
Why?
Because it's like under the house, like it's like a, basically it's like a root cellar, like if there's like an earthquake, not an earthquake, like a twister, that would be where we would go. It's so old, it's like all gross.
Love that for you.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's like pipes and stuff in it too, so not the move. When I was little, I wanted to clean it out, and my parents were like, no, it has a dirt floor. You're not spending time in there. It's fine. I don't even know. Are you folding laundry today?
I am. Weekly laundry folding.
Well, at least we know you're getting your laundry done, so.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It keeps me occupied, you know? It, like, reminds me to do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to our second Catherine Howard episode of Not So Bloody Mary. We didn't do a mini-sode last week because I cried 3 nights in a row because of English, so I didn't really have time to do any research. Take that up with my English teacher.
Yeah.
I didn't have any time, so, but, you know, whatever, school comes first, and luckily, my history teacher didn't give me as much work, thanks to Matt. Yeah, I also didn't have, like, anything to do on Friday, because I was already done my essay, but that's beside the point. We're very excited that so many people have found us from lots of different countries. I was reading them to Grace yesterday.
Yeah.
When she was over here, and there's like a ton of random countries. So, hi. Thank you for listening. And all the new people that found me on TikTok, hi. If you're listening to this, welcome.
Yes.
I mean, I would hope you've listened to an earlier episode before you listen to a part two. But if you found us from TikTok, that's great. And we're happy you're here. So, yeah, our last episode with Catherine, we ended with her about to go to court because, you know, we were trying to let her have, like, yay, she broke up with gross Francis Dearham. But, you know, Francis Dearham doesn't stop being gross just because she leaves.
No.
He will come back into this story because he's nasty and stalker, like, you know. As you do. That, like, weird boy from, like, middle school that can't get over you and follows you around. That's him.
That's him. Yeah.
That's him. Yeah, so when Catherine got to come to the Tudor court, it was 1539, I think. I actually can't count, guys. Yeah, it is 1539. Her arrival is made possible because people died. So that's great. 2 years before Catherine left the Dowager Duchess's house, Queen Jane Seymour died shortly after giving birth to Edward, her son, who, you know, to the real relief of nearly everybody, survived. Like, oh my god, thank god. It's been almost 30 years and we finally have a son.
Woo.
Like, holy crap, that's a really long time for Henry to wait. This entire country was probably like, whew. Like, people that were born when he became king are like a year or two away from turning 30, and he still didn't have a son.
Damn.
That's like a whole generation. But, you know, Henry doesn't, everyone's like, oh, well, he waited for 2 years to marry Anne of Cleves, so he mourned her. No, he didn't. There was, you know, she had a funeral. It was a great funeral. She's like the only one that got like a really cool funeral from Henry, because all the rest of them, you know, Anne and Catherine, Howard, this Catherine, they just kind of got like shoved in a box, and we don't even know exactly where their bodies are. So Jane, that's great. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Jane got like the best. She's doing great. That she gets a queen's funeral. So good for her. Woo. Good job, Jane. We're happy that you didn't get shoved in a box and dumped somewhere random.
Yeah.
But her funeral isn't really separated by a significant passage of time before the hunt for her replacement begins. Henry doesn't really wait. He wants a spare. And he also, I feel like Henry doesn't know how to be it without a wife or a female person in his life.
He's codependent.
He was kind of codependent, but also scarily not. Like, you can't actually. He's codependent on his terms. So he wants to marry either a French princess or a Habsburg princess, which is like Spain and all those crazy fun people. But the problem is that, you know, first of all, he just killed his wife, and everyone's like, no.
I want to be her.
I don't really think that sounds great for me. Like, also, he was really annoying to the French king. Like, he kept asking him, like, if he could see, like, all the French princesses. I'm pretty sure there's a story about how he wanted to have them all paraded out in front of him so he could pick the most beautiful one. And the king of France was like, no. No.
No.
We're not going shopping. That's a no from me. But the English ambassador to Paris reported home that the Queen of France, who was a Habsburg archduchess by birth, was doing everything in her power to strengthen the alliance between her husband and her brother. So they've got a pretty sweet alliance going on right now. And Henry's like, you know what? The French and Habsburgs they're allied, and their pact isn't going to be broken right now. Because usually how it goes is that either the English and the French are against the Habsburgs. Like, they just, like, it's like a little triangle, and they just switch around and fight all the time.
Yeah.
As you do. Henry's like, I'll look for friends in other places. So basically, English foreign policy for a few years is literally just to piss off the Habsburgs. That is his entire thing that he's doing right now. So it's in this mood that attention turns to Duke Wilhelm of Cleves. He's a German nobleman who is involved in a territorial dispute with the Habsburg emperor over the possession of the county of, I don't know how to say this, Gueldres. His eldest sister, Sibylla, was married to the head of the Schmalkaldic League? Sure.
Sure.
It's a federation of German rulers who are generally sympathetic to the, like, reformation of the church. And they don't really like the Habsburg Emperor because he technically is still their overlord. First of all, the word overlord just makes me think of, like, an evil villain.
Yeah, same.
So, you know, good old Charles, overlord. So, if Henry gets an alliance with the League through one of Sibylla's unmarried sisters, if the Empire and France attack, England has allies who could distract the Habsburgs by starting a war in their German territories.
You know, simple distraction plans, just start a war.
Exactly, as you do. So in the first week of October 1539, the negotiations end with the announcement that Henry would marry the Duke of Cleves' middle sister, Anne. So there's Sibylla, and then there's Anne, and then there's Amalia. Most people call her Amelia, like, in, like, English writing, because they're lazy. But yeah, Anna of Cleves' name in Germany is Anna, so I'm mostly going to call her Anna because we've already had Anne Boleyn, and it's just a mess and confusing. So once the tentative timetable for the royal wedding has been established, more and more women show up to court. Because, you know, there hasn't been a female other than, like, Mary. Mary has been the female, and I guess maybe Elizabeth randomly, but Elizabeth doesn't really have, like, a bunch of, like, you know, people in her gang. Like, those people are taking care of her. They're, like, governesses and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's probably not as exciting to be in Elizabeth's household. Like, it's still a big honor, but, like, it's babysitting. It's not really.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know how good Elizabeth is at matchmaking, because part of the appeal is that if you're in, like, the Queen's household, then she can help you get a good match. So I don't know if I'd want to let a 3-year-old be in charge of my future.
Yeah.
So they all show up. They're like, oh my gosh, thank God. I have had to be at home for the last 2 years. Do you know how annoying that has been? Catherine is still in her grandma's house by the first week of August because her name is absent from a thank you note that's signed by the ladies of the court to the king after they got taken to Portsmouth for a banquet and tour of the Navy's new ships. So I guess Henry was taking them out. Don't really know why, but okay. Maybe he feels bad that he hasn't let them have a job for so long because he hasn't gotten a wife. Or maybe he's searching for his next one.
Mm-hmm.
Further circumstantial evidence suggests that Catherine probably was at court by the 5th of November when the king announced that he expected his fiancé to arrive in the next 20 days. That optimistic estimate was defeated by the weather conditions that delayed Anna's arrival by a month. But the king's hope suggests that Catherine and many of the other ladies were already at the palace. Preparations for the future queen's numerous official receptions had started by the 24th of October. I'm pretty sure. No, James and Moore died on the 22nd, I think. No, it was the 24th. Happy death day, Jane. Yay. So this supports a timeline that has Catherine ending her romance with Francis Derham in the late summer of 1539 and arriving at court before the autumn. Yay. But Catherine is actually really excited to go, by, like, her own admission. She later told the Archbishop of Canterbury that all who knew her and kept her company knew how glad and desirous she was to come to the court. So she's like, all my friends are leaving the Dowager's household. I've always wanted to go to court. I don't want to be here anymore. It's kind of boring. We don't really do anything. And I like to be the center of attention.
Yeah.
Same, but not in that way. The Dowager Duchess didn't come with Catherine to court. You know, she's old. She probably doesn't want to come. But Norfolk House was close enough for her to visit and for the Dowager to keep informed of what was going on at court. On several subsequent occasions, the Dowager expressed variations on the remark that the King's Highness did cast a fantasy to Catherine Howard the first time that ever His Grace saw her. The Dowager made these claims when she was talking to several of Henry's counselors in 1541, and they didn't correct her, tellingly. They simply wanted to know who had told her, so that's great. Her recollection suggests that the King's initial attraction to Catherine was just, like, lust at first sight, which is kind of gross. Since it's 1539, he's like 50. I don't think he's actually 50. I literally never remember what year he was born because I don't care enough about him to remember it. But he's old and she's not. That's all you need to know. The Dowager she is like, he really was into her. Okay. Yeah. However, if Henry did notice Catherine when she first came to court, any flirtation seems to have been obvious, if the Dowager Duchess is to be believed, because I don't really think Catherine would tell her that. Hey, Grandma, guess what? Like, she didn't tell her about the people that she actually liked. She had that from her, but it was short-lived. So, I mean, good job, Henry. I don't know. After that first meeting, and, you know, probably some subsequent slightly gross displays of fondness towards her when she was with him, there aren't any further signs of royal interest in Catherine for several months. So, considering that Anne of Cleves hadn't yet come to England and the king was super excited to get married to her, it would be kind of odd if the Howards were like, hey, let's make Catherine Anna's competition, especially because all the signs initially suggest that Anna would enjoy her husband's support and affection. RIP to Anna, but instead, Catherine settled down to being in the queen's household, something that probably wasn't too difficult since the lady who was in charge of them and that they were technically supposed to be working for was still on the other side of the North Sea. Like, they didn't really have much to do. All the other ranks of ladies-in-waiting were either married or widowed. Catherine's immediate companions were the other maids of honor, who were young, unmarried girls like herself from a noble background, who had been sent to court to serve the future queen, who was both their chaperone and matchmaker. So it's basically just like a boarding school, except you actually have to work. Right. I mean, I've never been to a boarding school, but it's kind of just like you just get to all live together and, you know.
Love that.
Kind of fun. Along with memorizing the rules of who could pass through which door and who could hand this to who, it's not as bad as the French court in like the 18th century. But maids of honor still have quite a lot to remember. And they also have to look the part. They have to be stylish enough to like compliment their mistress without outshining her. Because, you know, the queen should look, the queen should look the best. Because otherwise you might be like, oh, who's that person? Is that the queen? It's like, no, that's that random 16-year-old girl who's here to be in charge of her. That's the queen. You want to have your eyes drawn to the queen first, right? Because, like, she's touched by God. Although, technically, none of Henry VIII's wives after Anne Boleyn were touched by God since they never got crowned. So, that's fun for them. Catherine's early purchases during her time with Francis Dereham show her appreciation for fashion. Because, remember, she bought those silk flowers and she was, like, really into them. She's like, oh my gosh, these are, like, the best thing ever.
Yes.
But life at court requires more than a few silk flowers. Catherine's family were expected to provide for her when she made her debut, especially her wardrobe. But since she was unmarried, she actually got to have a salary. She and the other maids of honor got £10 a year, which, like, doesn't sound like that much, but it was to them since they literally had never earned anything before.
Yeah.
And it's also 1539, so that's a little bit more than £10 a year now. This immediately she put towards paying back Francis Dereham what he had loaned her to buy some clothes in Lambeth. So this is a further indicator of her desire to move on from their relationship. She's like, yeah, I don't owe you anything anymore. Here you go. Here's your money.
Yes.
Good job, Catherine. Although Catherine did grow up in the aristocracy and its households, nothing in her past could have, like, prepared her for palace life. In terms of size and magnificence, the English royal establishment didn't have anyone that was comparable to it in the British Isles. Her own family's vast wealth paled in comparison to Henry's. One modern estimate puts Henry's income at nearly 40 times the Duke of Norfolk's. And the Duke of Norfolk is one of the most rich noblemen in the country. So, good job, Henry. Make that money. But he still spent way more than he should. So, I don't really think it was that great for him. I don't think he was someone that should have that much money because he doesn't use it for the right things.
Yeah.
Life in the palace brought Catherine into more regular contact with other members of her family. Her elder half-sister Isabella was also in the Queen's household. She was one of the ladies of the Privy Chamber. And she and her husband, Sir Edward Baynton, who was Vice Chamberlain of the Queen's household, were beneficiaries of sustained, if slightly restrained, royal favor. They got two countryside properties and grants earlier that year. So go, Isabella. Good job. With Francis Dereham back at Norfolk House, Catherine enjoyed a new flirtation that winter. Thomas Culpepper was the son of a gentry family who had rebelled against Richard III, which meant that they were very well placed to enjoy royal favor after the Tudors came to power. Catherine's mother had been a Culpepper, but subsequent accounts of Catherine's career that, like, say that Thomas was her, like, first cousin or whatever are incorrect. He and Catherine are sixth cousins, which in Tudor times is, like, basically not related at all.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's still a little gross thinking about that.
Yeah.
But to them, it's like, no. It's not like she's marrying some other Howard.
Yeah.
Thomas is exactly her type. He served as one of the king's gentlemen of the Privy Chamber, all of whom had to be, quote, well-languaged, expert in outward parts, and meet and able to be sent on familiar messages. So basically, he's handsome, athletic, and if he had any insecurities, they were extremely well hidden. An inventory of his possessions that was taken in 1541 shows that Thomas was a very good dresser. He had a lot of clothes. And the king, who liked to be surrounded by men younger than himself, especially as he got older, perhaps, you know, trying to recapture something of his own youth, which is really weird, but he adored him. And the profitable side to being Henry's, like, little favorite dude was that Thomas, who was unmarried, was a wealthy man by 1539. He noticed Catherine shortly after her arrival at court. They were both young, unattached, and good-looking. They flirted, and he pursued her. Catherine apparently held Thomas at arm's length. He was persistent. He told her that he loved her, and their attraction to each other became a topic of conversation between Catherine and the other maids of honor. So right now, they're not doing anything wrong. They're both unmarried. Like, you know,
they're it's okay just right now.
It's a thing that's just, you know, whatever, it's going on, it's cool. I mean, Thomas is a little, he's a little sketch, but he hasn't done anything that we know of that's bad to her yet, or, you know, anything like that. From remarks that Thomas made a year later, it seems that he wanted and expected a sexual relationship with which Catherine did not give him. Thomas did not deal well with sexual frustration, and so he moved on to somebody else. He was like, nah. I'm done. This was unexpected to Catherine, and it caused her to break down in tears in front of her fellow maids.
Aww.
She's still not very old. She's still, like, our age. Like,
poor babe.
Not happening for her. The rejection certainly came as a jolt, and very weird to someone who had only ever been the object of devotion and pursuit. Prior to Thomas, Catherine was always the one that ended her relationships. And she had never been replaced by another woman. So that's not fun. It's a new and unwelcome thing to her. And it does seem that she had genuine feelings for him, so that makes it even worse.
Yeah.
Poor Catherine.
Poor man.
But, you know, courtiers, just like servants, gossiped only a little bit less than they breathed. They're always gossiping. They literally never shut up. And the rumor's ability to report and magnify meant that the news reached Francis back at Lambeth. Ugh, go away, Francis. Literally no one wants you here. But he came to court. He literally came to her job. Like, no? Go away. He came and he's like, is it true? And she's like, what? Is it true that you're going to marry Culpepper? She's like, no, we broke up. But they fought, and Durham insisted that she belonged with him. Catherine, who had already shown her ability to be brutally honest when she was upset, was firmer with him than she had been when they last spoke. She's basically like, no, we're never gonna, this is never gonna happen. Get over it. Go away. Leave me alone. Which, props to her.
Ooh.
That's a way to stand up for yourself, hon. But yay, now Anna of Cleves is coming. By December, she's at last on her way to England, and the king is very impatient to see her for the first time. He wanted her to travel by sea, but the court in her natal Dusseldorf they wanted her to make the journey by land. Because they're like, sea does not sound fun, because ships can wreck.
We don't want that.
Weather is not always good. Let's remember what happened to Catherine of Aragon when she tried to come over. It took like 5 months. It took way longer than it was supposed to. They got so lost. Poor bestie. Like, that would have been gross. Because there's not even, like, Wi-Fi. You're just on a ship by yourself waiting.
Yeah.
Thomas Culpepper was sent across the channel as part of the delegation to welcome Anna when she came to Calais. But they found themselves trapped there with her because storms prevented her return journey. Yeah, like, Anna of Cleves did not have a good time getting over to England. I think this is indicative of her future there for the first year, anyways. A letter managed to get through from Anne Bassett, who was a fellow maid of honor with Catherine, who was hosting the future queen in Calais, and it said that the princess was good and gentle to serve and please. So they're like, yay, she's nice. Thank God. We need someone nice because Henry's annoying. They didn't actually say that. They would get their heads chopped off.
Yeah.
Yeah. The courtiers and officials were less inclined to be adventurous than merchants who tried to make it back through to England, even though there was a massive storm. So the letters got through long before Anna did. Finally, 2 days after Christmas, the weather lifted long enough for her to board a ship and cross from Calais to England. Yay!
Yay!
Then Henry was a gross man and was like, I gotta see her now. And they're like, but, bruh, she doesn't know you're coming. And he's like, well, I gotta do it. And so he goes to see her, and he just comes in. And apparently, according to, like, the story, he dresses up like an old peasant man or something. It's a little weird.
Why?
Because this is a thing that Henry did. So when he was younger, he would put on all these plays for mostly Catherine of Aragon. And he would be dressed up as somebody else. And the whole plot would be that everyone literally knew it was him, but they pretended that they didn't know it was him. And he thought that, like, he looked really cool. Like, he really liked to dress up and pretend to be someone else.
So I'm going along with
it. Yeah, because they're like, okay, he's whack. But also, they're all, like, really young then. Like, it was a really young court. But he decides he is not young anymore. Like, he is not. When he was doing this to Catherine of Aragon, he was, like, 25. He was fit. And he was really handsome. Now, he's an old man. And Anne of Cleves doesn't know who he is. Like, she doesn't know what he looks like. She's only ever seen paintings. And he literally just, like, comes up and apparently, like, got in her space or something. And if what we're told, she, like, kind of freaked out because a strange man was, like, on her.
In her business?
And he got butt hurt. Because a lot of historians that talk about this, like, I don't remember it actually, like, if we know if it happened or not. But it showed him that he wasn't young anymore. And so from that moment on, he was just determined to hate her. Like, I don't like her. So, yeah. He, once again, proves that he doesn't know what sexual assault is and doesn't care about anything like that. But, yeah, then they had their first official meeting because he was weird and he met her before he was supposed to. So Anna comes out of this, like, tent, and she's dressed in cloth of gold with a pearl-encrusted bonnet on her head. She is helped into a saddle that's decorated with devices that are associated with her family in Cleves, and she rides over to Henry. He is dressed in a purple velvet coat with, like, jewels all over it. And they talk to each other, and the crowds that come to watch them cheer, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. We have a new queen. Yay.
Yay. Hopefully she doesn't get murdered.
Yeah, that's probably what they're all thinking. I mean, once Catherine gets murdered, like, I feel like I'd be even more worried, because this is just one that's died. It's, like, you know, only one in three now, right now.
Yeah.
And then it ends. Then it's, like, 2 of 5. That's lol. Ah. For the journey to Greenwich Palace, where the other royal wedding was going to happen 2 days later, Catherine and the other gentlewomen were put in carriages, and they go in a procession off to Greenwich. Once they're behind the palace walls, Henry accompanied Anna and her servants to her private apartments. And from her apartments, they could hear cannons in the city firing salutes to be like, yay, you're here. We're so excited. That's good. Catherine spent the next month of her life at Greenwich. And it was at Greenwich that on January 6th, which was the Feast of the Epiphany and the last of the traditional 12 days of Christmas, that Catherine helped escort the queen to her wedding. That's good. Yay. Royal weddings in Tudor England were not usually great state occasions. The last public royal union had been Prince Arthur's 4 decades earlier to Catherine of Aragon. And apart from Mary I, her marriage to Prince Philip of Spain in 1554. All subsequent British royal weddings took place in relatively private palace chapels until the children of King George V decided to embrace the media age in the 1920s. So, like, Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip had a filmed wedding, I believe. I believe that it was either filmed or, like, very public. Both. So Henry VIII's fourth wedding was conducted in the Queen's closet at Greenwich at 8 o'clock in the morning. See, like, I mean, hers is, like, kind of private, but, like, if Anne Boleyn couldn't say that she got married, they didn't, like, have all the details done yet. Like, oh my god. They were a little rushed. Elizabeth was coming. She could not be slowed down. Count von Overstein, a nobleman in Anna's brother's service, gave her away, and mass was celebrated by the Archbishop of Canterbury. When it was over, the Dukes of Norfolk and Suffolk escorted the new queen back to her rooms, where Catherine and all the other women of the household stayed with her while the king went to change his outfit. Oh, Henry. Okay. Oh, go change your outfit, buddy. The wedding afternoon was taken up with a procession, and then they had their first public meal together as husband and wife. And then Anna goes to change because they're rich, so they have lots of clothes. And that night, the court was entertained with banquets and dancing, and then the king and queen were ceremonially put to bed. The drapes were closed, the servants left, and so everybody assumed that the deed was done, that they had consummated the relationship. By the time the court moved to Westminster on the 5th of February, no one that was at the court had missed the rumors about the king's latest wedding night. The whispers had even reached the ears of the Queen of France. Thomas Cromwell, who obviously had an interest in seeing the marriage work since he put it together, so, you know, his head is kind of resting on it, thought that Anna had a queenly manner, and they were all like, yeah, she seems pretty chill. She's got good manners. She seems really nice. But people are a little worried because initially a date in February had been put aside for Anne of Cleves' coronation. That was then pushed back to Whitsuntide in early summer. So that's not great. On the 22nd of February, Marie de Guise was crowned Queen Consort in Scotland at Holyrood Abbey, which is an event that probably, pushed Anna's worry forward about why her own hadn't been arranged yet. So she dropped heavy hints about it to some of the king's counselors when they called on her in early spring, at which point they must have known that there would never be a coronation. At some point, a few of Queen Anna's ladies took it upon themselves to find out what was happening in the royal marriage. A well-aimed compliment would bring information for the queen's denial or acceptance of it. And one afternoon, while Anne was with three of her women, the Countess of Rutland and the widowed ladies Edgecombe and Rochford is Jane Boleyn, they expressed the hope that she might soon be pregnant and give birth to a Duke of York, and she took the bait. She was like, nah, I'm certain I'm not pregnant, and she stuck to it that even when the women were like, well, how could you be absolutely certain? Then Lady Rochford joked, by our lady, I think your grace is a maid still indeed. And the queen said, how can I be a maid and sleep every night with the king? Lady Rochford made the obvious joke that a bit more than sleep was required to make a prince. But Anna didn't really seem to know much more. She was like, when he comes to bed, he kisses me and taketh me by the hand and biddeth me good night, sweetheart. And in the morning kisses me and biddeth me farewell, darling. Is that not enough? And Lady Rutland was like, madam, there must be more than this, or it will be long before we have a Duke of York. No kidding. Not great. We don't know if she was like purposefully being dumb or if she actually had no idea.
Who knows?
In her short career as queen, she had a great praise for her public behavior, and several sources confirmed that she was very popular with the people of London. She tried to learn English as quickly as she could because, you know, she had to have a translator, so that's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
You're, like, trying to talk with your husband and the translator's just there. she had mastered it by the end of 1540, so that's actually pretty good, because English is a hard language to learn. Good job. She asked to be taught the rules of the card game her husband enjoyed, and she asked advice from his friends, being like, how can I be more agreeable to him? Yeah, she's just trying really hard, but it's not working. After their first meeting, Henry had entered into the marriage determined to dislike her, and the attention created the reality. That's not great. Before Anna arrived, the Archbishop of Canterbury had tried to warn Cromwell that an arranged marriage was a risk for someone like Henry because he set such high store on his personal happiness. None of his other wives have been arranged marriages. He's lucky in that way because a lot of kings have arranged marriages, like when they're kids.
Yeah.
So he's gotten to choose all three of his wives before this and the next two. He doesn't do well with not being able to choose because he needs to be in love.
Yeah.
Or think he's in love anyways. That's just not great for them. Before a gardener struck against them, the Bishop of he's gross. The English reformers and radicals had their hopes raised by the king's marriage to Anna of Cleves because they thought she was Protestant. Unfortunately, they overestimated the queen's influence and her allegiance to Protestantism. The Queen of France was closer to the mark when she said that Anna of Cleves was a Catholic whose family, like Henry, had quarreled with the Pope. Yeah, basically that's what she was. In this ugly battle between Gardiner and the Duke of Norfolk versus, like, Cromwell, Henry's physical attraction to Catherine was obviously very useful. Subsequent accounts of her to rise to the throne often cast Norfolk and Gardiner as a cross between her chaperones and her pimps. So, that's great. Gardiner's modern biographer, Glenn Redworth, has cast doubt on this sort of version of events. And there is room for skepticism in, like, how it happened, especially because this narrative of Catherine's rise is very neat. The Dowager Duchess's previously mentioned recollection of Henry's instant attraction to Catherine proves evidence that the initial stage of their relationship was spontaneous and it wasn't, you know, it was kind of inconsequential. The likelihood is that the king flirted with Catherine, probably obviously, but the impending arrival of Anna of Cleves made it kind of just a social diversion. Once the king then decided that he hated his new wife, his interest in Catherine revived, as he does. Norfolk was responding to circumstances as they unfolded is probably closer to the fact, and this is supported by the fact that he clearly knew very little about his niece. There is, for instance, absolutely nothing to suggest that he was aware of her previous romances with Henry Mannix or Francis Dereham. The Dowager didn't really rush to enlighten him. If the Howards wanted to entice Henry VIII, they wouldn't have chosen Catherine because she was, like, you know, damaged goods to be gross.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to be upset about that. He doesn't want that. Like, Norfolk isn't close to his nieces. Like, yes, Anne and Catherine were both his nieces, but he and Anne, like, literally stopped talking after, like, 1531 because they fought. And Catherine was, like, his brother who had literally no money, just, like, one of his random, like, 10 kids. He probably didn't really even know her name.
Yeah.
Like, well, he has, like, 16 siblings or something. There's, like, a bajillion of them. They've all got kids. She's probably not very high on his list of ones to actually know. Yeah. It's just not, he probably doesn't really know anything about her. But Catherine does seek the advice of her relatives because the king keeps asking to hang out with her. He's like, hey, you up? Wanna hang? They gave her advice on the proper way to behave when she was with him. They said that in what sort to entertain the king's highness and how often is what they said later when they were questioning them. The kind of, like, chronology of Catherine's affair with Henry is unclear. A few clues are provided in grants made to her by the royal household, one of which made Catherine a woman of moderate means in her own right. At the end of April, she got the goods of two condemned criminals, a father and a son, both called William Lidbetter, who had been convicted of murder. So she got all their stuff.
Oh.
I mean, they killed someone, so...
Yeah.
She can have their money. At some point, her family decided to move Catherine back to Lambeth for propriety's sake. During her courtship with the king, Anne Boleyn had insisted on being accompanied by her mother for a chaperone, while Edward Seymour and his wife, Anne, fulfilled the honors for Jane Seymour in 1536. So she's just doing what she's supposed to do. Henry's barge, the Lion, was difficult to miss since, you know, it's the king's boat. Everyone knows what it looks like. And it's also massive. So when he began paying evening visits to Lambeth, people started talking. And when the official reason given was that the king had called to pay his respects to the Dowager Duchess of Norfolk, they were like, nah, bud. No one believes you. Why would he go and visit her?
Dang.
Whether the relationship with Catherine was sexual at this stage is unknown. The royal barge's visits provoked gossip, but Henry was historically impressed by women who preferred to wait for a wedding ring. He gives up trying to make them his wife, usually, if they sleep with him. If Catherine was his mistress, or if she would have become his mistress had the relationship lasted much longer, is unclear. We don't know.
Who knows?
Queen Anna found out about the liaison and confided her unhappiness on June 20th to a fellow Clevian called Carl Harst, who lived in London. By that stage, the king's relationship with Catherine was well advanced, and events in Europe had combined with those in London to make the young, lovely, according to someone, diminutive, I don't know, she's small, Catherine a serious contender for Anna's crown. At the time of his wedding in January, Henry justified going through with it because to abandon Anna would be a means to drive her brother into the hands of the emperor and the French king. But by the end of spring, Cleves wasn't really an asset anymore. They're kind of more a liability. English spies reported that the anti-Habsburg clique at the French court was gaining ground. So that alliance is weakening, and Henry doesn't really think that Cleves is going to do him any good. So he doesn't care.
Right.
With the alliance gone, Anna's position is no longer safe. On the 22nd of May, Henry received news that a prince, the Duke of Rothesay, had been born in Scotland as heir to Henry's nephew, King James V. James wrote to his uncle that God had sent a son and prince fair and lively to succeed to us and this our realm. There was no chance of Henry fathering a spare prince if he remained in the marriage to a woman that he considered useless and repellent. Also, if he never slept with her, there's no chance of having a baby. He desperately wanted to get out of the relationship. Under the guise of trying to protect her and her servants from any possible outbreak of plague in the heat, Queen Anna's household was sent to Richmond Palace on the outskirts of London. They're just like, bye!
Bye!
This was a ruse to get her away from the king before the divorce proceedings began. Or technically the annulment, since Henry insisted the marriage had never been legal in the first place. Catherine stayed with her family while the council prepared to dissolve the king's marriage. As a young girl, Anne of Cleves had been betrothed to the Marquis de Pont-à-Mousson. Despite having received the documentation which proved that the pre-contract had left both of them free to wed elsewhere, the English government insisted that this engagement meant Anna was never legally free to marry Henry VIII. Okay, to justify divorcing her, Henry fired out reasons, like, randomly. He said that his reluctance on his wedding day showed that he had been coerced into the marriage with a woman he liked so ill he was sorry she had come. His inability to consummate the match was described in great detail, as were his subsequent wet dreams to prove he could and should marry somebody else. He was like, no, it's not her. It's not me, it's her. Because I am still able to be sexually active.
Like the opposite of, it's not you, it's me.
Yeah, he was like, it's her. I would just like to point out that she's like 25. She is also capable of being sexually active.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Delegation was dispatched to Richmond to deliver the news to Anna that she was no longer queen through her translator, who did his part very well. The queen's representative said that the queen took her the news without alteration, and that she replied through her official that she is always content with the king. The good thing is that, you know, she thought she was going to be murdered, probably, so she didn't get murdered. That's good.
That's a plus.
Yeah, in the Tudors. Not
getting murdered when you marry Henry, that's like a flex.
Good job. Literally, she deserves the flex. But in the Tudors, she, like, has this whole scene where she's, like, crying, and she's like, will he kill me? And I'm like, bestie, no.
He won't.
You haven't even met her in the Tudors yet.
I haven't.
She's so sweet. I love her in the Tudors. She literally deserves so much better. And then they just, like, randomly bring her back in sometimes. I'm like, why are you here, honey? Whatever. In fact, as subsequent events were to show, Anna, like, she pretended that she was okay, but she felt utterly humiliated. Her earlier, like, yeah, that's fine, might have been because she genuinely didn't understand that the decision had already been reached. She thought that they were just, like, starting it. And when she realized that she was definitely being divorced, Carl Harst remembered, good Lord, she made such tears and bitter cries, it would break a heart of stone.
My heart of stone.
My heart of stone. Then you gotta do that song is so extra. Oh my God. It's just like, wow. Okay. Pop off. I literally just skip in the recording every single time I listen to it. I just skip to the whistle note and then I move on. I'm like, good job, Natalie. We're done now.
Gotta pay our respects to Natalie.
Yeah, go off. Go off, Miss Girl. On the 9th of July, two archbishops, 16 bishops, and 139 clergymen declared the marriage between Henry VIII and Anne of Cleves null and void on grounds of non-consummation and pre-contract. 4 days later, their decision was ratified by Parliament, which then made itself even more useful to Henry by rushing through a special act that permitted the king to marry a woman with whom he had previously had sexual relations with or with any of her close relatives. Because, you know, they gotta get rid of Anne Boleyn, because they probably annulled Anne's marriage to Henry because Henry had banged Mary Boleyn, and so they're like, oh, crap, we have to make sure that he can, sleep with Catherine, too. So, sorry, Anne, you, that act came around a few years too late.
Yeah.
Sweetheart, I'm sorry. Now the counselors were like, oh, thank God. They made good on their promise to Henry at the start of the divorce proceedings that they would secure his virtuous desire. I would just like to wonder if they actually asked him if they could make that act, because that would mean that he would actually have to think about Anne Boleyn, and I feel like he didn't.
Yeah.
That's why he ignored Elizabeth.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no. Maybe he just pretended that Elizabeth didn't have a mother. You just appeared, honey.
Just out of thin air.
I feel like he had to do that to make himself feel better.
Probably.
Yeah. Anna of Cleves' obedience was rewarded by a king anxious to show his generosity to the world. He's like, look, see how nice I am? Because they're all like, holy crap, man. Divorced, beheaded, died, divorced. What are we doing? He's like, no. I'm so nice. I am so nice. Look.
Like, watch.
Okay. He's like, watch me. I'm Mr. Nice Guy. And he also wants to buy her silence.
Ah.
She was given an honorary position in the royal family. So she's ranked above everyone except the king's children and his future wife. She gets the legal rank of one of his sisters. So she's called the king's sister. A sizable entourage of servants. Henry VII's palace at Richmond. Anne Boleyn's childhood home at Hever Castle, and multiple smaller estates to supplement her income, as well as plate, jewels, clothes, and furniture for her houses. Mary Boleyn is still alive.
Well.
I think she got knocked out of the will, though, when she went and married that random soldier man.
Yeah.
But still, I would be like, excuse me?
I mean, she's still alive, so that's a plus.
Why are you, well, she dies soon. Why are you giving your ex-wife my house? I'm pretty sure that it went back to Henry when Thomas Boleyn died, though. For some reason. Well, I guess Henry killed his heir.
That's true.
Rest in peace to George. I hope Elizabeth did something with it. You know.
Yeah.
As you do. In return for that, all the stuff that she got, she was required to go quietly, so she wasn't allowed to be Catherine of Aragon.
Right.
This is also part of why he buys her off. Catherine caused him so much trouble. She did not shut up. And Anna was like, uh-huh, I will go. I will go. Don't kill me. I am sure that Anne would have done the exact same thing if Henry had wanted to divorce her. She saw what happened to Catherine, and she saw what happened to Mary. Yeah, she'd have been like, oh, you want me to go to a nunnery? Yes. Bye, bestie. See you never.
Like, I'll go.
I'll go. So she also has to write letters to her relatives in Europe to talk about how chivalrous Henry is and how her annulment was justice. If I got that letter, I'd be like, this is a load of crap, but okay.
Literally.
She also had to live in England for the rest of her life unless she wanted to lose everything that Henry gave her. So she goes back to Cleves. She doesn't get the allowance anymore. She doesn't have the houses. She doesn't have the title. She doesn't have all that. And her servants were asked to keep an eye on her, open her correspondence, and report if she ever attempted to take a lover or find another husband. No one is allowed to replace the king, even though he doesn't want to marry her. He's so repulsed by her that he annuls their marriage, but he won't let her get married again.
Dang.
But you know what? If I were her, I'd be like, yeah, cool. I'm, like, the richest woman, save, like, Mary, in this entire country. So you can do whatever the heck you want. As she began her new life, and it was now commonly said that the king would marry a lady of great beauty, daughter of Norfolk's deceased brother. A few weeks before the divorce, lawyers working on the case had leaked the news that Catherine was the intended replacement. No one is like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. They all know. Catherine probably didn't see much of her fiancé in the run-up to the wedding because he was in London for most of July to host the visitors from the Empire, then to testify to the illegality of his marriage with Anne of Cleves. Catherine's wedding was even more private than Anne's, and the formal announcement wasn't made until the 8th of August. By marrying Catherine, Henry VIII achieved the dubious distinction of becoming the most married Christian monarch in European history. The previous record had been held by the Emperor Charles IV. What is happening in your house?
What did you say?
What the heck just happened outside your
house? I don't know. I think a motorcycle.
Wow.
Wow, it's, my window's right by the road, so you get to hear everything.
It's great and standard, guys. But yay, Henry he has gotten the prize. He is the most married Christian monarch in European history. And he's not even done.
Yay.
The previous record had been held by Emperor Charles IV, who had managed to avoid Henry's nasty reputation because there were natural deaths that resulted in three of his four wives predeceasing him. So they all just, like, died. He didn't divorce or kill them. But, yeah, so Catherine got married to Henry, and Cromwell got his head chopped off.
Cute.
Yeah, so fun.
Aesthetic.
Like, what the heck? Wait, I'm pretty sure it was, like, on, like, the same day. I'm searching it up. Okay, so he died on July 28th, 1540. His portrait is, like, so ugly. It is not his best look. When did Catherine Howard marry Henry VIII? July 28th, 1540. They were married on the exact same day that Henry beheaded Thomas Cromwell. What the heck?
Oh my.
I don't think that's a good way to start off a marriage.
Yeah, maybe not.
Like how you're not supposed to go to bed angry. You're not supposed to start off a marriage killing someone.
Yeah, probably not.
I also don't think you're supposed to get married in the rain or something. Like there's a superstition that means that there will be lots of tears in your marriage. Well, guess what? Killing someone on the day that you get married means that one of you will die by the end of the marriage. And it happened. Actually, they weren't technically married anymore, I guess, when she died, I don't think. Although Hampton Court Palace is saying that their marriage ended on the day she died. I'm sure he would have annulled it before then, though, because he couldn't say that he killed his wife. Like, we were never married. What? What are you talking about? I only have one wife. Two wives, actually. Jane and Catherine were my only wives.
Woo.
Anyways, besties, that's the end of the episode because they're married now. And the next one won't be as fun.
They do be married now, though.
Yeah, they do be married. I mean, not that this one was very fun because it wasn't fun for Anna. But it was great for Catherine. Now she's queen.
So great.
So great. I mean, like, nothing bad has happened yet. She's just gotten married.
Yeah.
So
far.
Go off, bestie. Way to get married. Yeah, for like the hour before you find out. Then Henry's like, oh yeah, sorry, honey. I have to go to Cromwell's execution. Bye. He definitely didn't show up, though, so it's okay.
Yeah.
He didn't come. So, peoples of the world, well, anyone who's listening to this podcast, thank you for listening once again. Thanks a lot. Text us at our Instagram, which is notsobloodymary_podcast, and let us know what you thought.
We'll talk to you guys.
Yeah, you can follow us on there. You can go to our TikTok, which is notsobloodymary_podcast as well. That's where we post the most because, you know, no one that we know follows us there. So it's a lot less awkward to post things. Yeah. You should follow Grace on TikTok at @thelovely_bookworm. Yeah.
Yay.
And you should go to the iTunes store and leave a review. And rate us because that helps other people find us. And you should go to anchor.fm/notsobloodymarypodcast. I don't know if that's actually what it is, but I'm sure if you went to anchor.fm and searched Not So Bloody Mary in the little search bar thing, you can find us. You can leave us a voice memo. I don't know if you can rate us on there. I just know that I send voice memos to Recovering Glee like every single day on Anchor. Like, hey, Besties, I'm back. I actually don't do that every day because I have too much social anxiety to do that. But yeah, you can do that. And what should they do today, Grace?
I think y'all should go, if there's any readers, y'all should go read a book that you have to give back to your friend because you've had it for like months and you haven't given it back to them yet. Because I'm gonna do that.
Are we talking about a certain person here? You have like three books.
Well, I may have like three of Quinn's books.
Yeah.
That I have not read yet.
Yeah.
And I need to give them back.
Well, yeah. It's okay, though, because I have a bunch of books that I'm reading right now. They don't actually belong to anyone, though. They're actually mine.
Yours. They are a part of my bookshelf.
Yeah, I know. It's a library book, but my mom's reading it right now, and she's like the slowest reader ever, so I have to wait for her to be done, which means that we're probably going to have to renew the library book so I can read it. But yeah, I just finished a book where the girl and her mom murdered her dad.
Oh.
But it was justified, so I don't care. Yeah, it was really fun. And then her boyfriend fell off a cliff and became brain dead.
Oh.
Thanks, Auntie Carrie. It was a really nice book that you got me for my birthday. It was actually really good. It's called The Great Alone. It's won a lot of prizes. It's a pretty new book. But yeah. So thank you so much for listening, everybody. If there's ever something that you want to hear, just hit us up, like text us, say, hey, could you cover this person? Or could you do a mini-sode on this? Because I need ideas sometimes.
And we will.
And we will, eventually. We do have some people that we want to get through. But we will do anything if you want us to talk about something. And we're almost done school, so then... I mean, I don't know if I'll have more time because I'll be working. But
yeah, I'm trying to get a job.
Grace is going to get a job. I have faith.
Manifest it. Let's go.
Yeah, everybody do your crystal stuff or, you know, your other things if you've got other things that you do. And,
help me get a job, everyone.
Hopefully by the next time that we talk to you, Grace will have at least a lead on a job. Are you going to go to the pharmacy?
Yes, I need to make my cover letter, though.
Ew, I hate cover letters.
But it's fine. We'll do
it. It's so nice because Blue Mountain, as soon as you get employed there, unless you quit, they just want you every summer. They're like, do you want to come back? I'm like, no, not really, but yeah.
But I want money, so.
I love money. Well, this year I get to do a different job, so that's fun. And then hopefully in the fall I can be a lifeguard.
Awesome.
Maybe. Awesome. Wow. Okay. Go watch In the Heights. Because I really want to watch it so bad, and I haven't gotten to yet because I don't have HBO Max, and we are not in a place where theaters are open.
Right, yes.
So I just am going to cry.
Cry.
But yeah, go watch it if you can, because I've heard it's really, really good.
Yes,
so,
go watch it.
Yeah. Henry wants to watch it, too. He says that... we will provide an excuse for him to watch it. So I think I'm probably going to end up watching it with him in like the backyard. We should do like a thing of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like how we did Hamilton. Yes. Okay. Peace out, home slices. Have we love fun, you all very, very much. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.